Welcome to Super Tati's for Parshas Chukas. We'll begin with our stories. There's a handful of stories that I have, and we'll see how many we can fit into about 5-6 minutes. The first one is about a Maisa Shahaya with me, is with an actual Chavrusa of mine. I had a Chavrusa who was notorious for showing up late for a Chavrusa time, and I started learning a different limud for just when I was waiting for him. And sometimes I would fall asleep and take a very gesunter nap. And at a certain point in time, I kind of lost my patience for him. And I finally gave him the business that he probably earned. And I said, listen, you know, maybe it's time to try to, you know, set your clock ahead or do whatever it is. And he said, back to me, he said, listen, I understand how frustrating it is for me to show up late all the time, but I just want you to understand that it seems like in my family, this mita is inescapable. You know, I show up late, my family, they show up late. But I want you to know, even though this is not the right thing to do, this mita has served my family very well. My grandfather had this mita also, and he had a ticket for the Titanic. And due to this mita, he survived the Titanic. So I think that he literally missed the boat. I think that one of the lekachs from this story, it's not to say that it's good to be late, and I would never encourage that, but I think that sometimes there are things that we find out about ourselves or about others that we think are very, very frustrating, and we feel like they're inescapable. You know, almost seems like a fait accompli. And it's just important for us to know that sometimes a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us certain challenges because they're actually, you know, a help for us. In one way or another, and sometimes in ways we don't expect. So it's interesting, especially the younger your children are, to help them kind of explore that, and hopefully it will develop over time. Why am I tall? Why am I short? Why am I slow? Why am I fast? Why am I smart? Why am I not? But, you know, all the other stuff. These are questions we should be trying to figure out. Well, what do I do with it if it's something I can't escape? So another chizik. Since we learn, they say the Brisker Rav said an interesting comment, which I thought was very, very good. Just to remember, he says that somebody who learns Rashi ala Chumash can feel all the sweetness in the world. And if you feel this, you could just at least get a little bit of it. So I heard that quote and I thought it was very encouraging for all of us, you know, as we're trying to prepare. You know, this is supposed to be a supplement and not supposed to be a replacement for people's preparation. So, to the extent that, you know, we're trying to learn, you know, you can sit and learn Chumash and Rashi in a way which is just extraordinary. Next is a joke. The joke is, well, it's humor, is it's known that Rav Chaim Kanievsky was very, very insistent on what I'll put quotes around traditional Jewish names. He didn't like people making up new Jewish names, and the ones that have roots in the Mesorah he would accept. And he would often give a hard time to people who came to him asking for brachas to, to say, well, what's your name? And if they had the wrong name, he said, no. What's your real name? Like, you know, let's figure out something right here. So once somebody had a daughter during Parshas Beshalach, which is also known as Shabbos Shira, and they went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and he said, Baruch Hashem, I had a daughter who was born this week. You know, it's kind of auspicious. Can I name her Shira? And his response was, in connection with the Parsha, he said, well, if they were born during Parshas Para, would you name her Para? And that was the end of it. So I thought that that was a really important thing to think about. Next one I have to say, and it's just very short because it's also kind of a half humorous but very, very important thing as well. It's Rav Yehuda Amital's his Yahrzeit's coming up, and the way it's told is he would famously leave weddings early. I mean, you know, he was a very clever person. He was invited to a lot of weddings. He had to go to a lot of them. And Baruch Hashem, he lived to Arichus Yomim. So when he would leave, he would commonly say and famously say, I'm sorry, I have to go, but I have to go to a family simcha. So people say, "Nu, what's the family simcha?" And he would say, "Oh, the family simcha is that my family is happy when I'm home." And he was not, I mean, obviously he put a little bit of humor in it, but he was not ashamed to say that I want to be Mitztarif. I want to join in all of these simchas, but I have to balance that responsibility with other things as well. I think that for all of us who are trying to be super tatis, you know, super tatis and trying to do all the things that we're trying to do, we are also struggling for balance. But the investment of time with our families is an investment that is, it cannot be understated. And we don't need to apologize for it. Rav Amital didn't, and we don't need to either. So I heard I found one other story about Yeshua Neubert, who was the Baal Mechaber of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, a great Talmud Chacham, and specifically with respect to Hilchos Shabbos from his son, Rabbi Akiva. And they said that he was in hiding a little bit in Holland. And there was a period where, I guess as part of the features of whatever their hiding situation was, they weren't able to put on tefillin because otherwise they would get caught or maybe they weren't accessible. So there, it was ones, and they were putter, which means it's an unforeseen situation. They were completely exempt from it. But he felt this extraordinary desire, not to, have a day without tefillin involved. So he took a wooden box that was kind of like it, and he put it up a mukum tefillin just to feel a little bit of the feeling of a mitzvah. Obviously, there was no halachic value to what he did. It was really an emotional value. But the value emotionally of being so connected to mitzvos is something that really should be to be highlighted to all of us, because occasionally, since we have so many chiyuvim and such an such a desire to be multitasking for the Ribbono Shel Olam, occasionally what can happen is we become robotic. And we forget what's going on in our head. We need to feel that emotional connection to the mitzvos. Okay, a couple of divrei Torah. The first one is the paraduma is the exemplar of the mitzvos we don't understand, and it is often brought. I mean, we say Chazal tell us the Satman and the Umos Olam say, "Hey, what's the deal with this? Like, why is it that this mitzvah is?" It's an important tziv. It's also now found in the Sforno. It says, it's true, we don't understand all of the paraduma, but there are parts of it that we do understand. The part that we don't understand is that it would make impure the pure and make the pure impure. Impure, and that is confusing. So the Sforno goes out to say, listen, we don't understand all of the paraduma, but it doesn't mean we don't understand something. And he goes on and gives a list of six lekachs, six things that that we could think about. Like one, the first is there are parties who get tameh who we imagine should get tameh. Two, we understand why the red cow is red because of the pasuk in Yeshayahu, which is also tied to the Lashon Shel Zahoris for Yom Kippur about the process of tshuva. It talks about a balance, right? How we counterbalance something. And specifically, that turns into four is really kind of in the Rambam view of the Shvil HaZahav, sometimes in able to get in balance, we need to push to other extremes, which is why somebody who's tamei mase, then we get this purifying process and whatnot. And number five is the Shni Tolas and the Ezov represent, on the one hand, gaiva, and on the other hand, extreme humility in inverse order. So it's said, he says it, and also I've seen in Chassidish Sfarim, I believe the Chidushei Arim says it as well, that this is trying to tell us that too much gaiva or too much humility are both bad. And we're supposed to try to figure out how to manage an appropriate balance. And that's there. It's a very hush of a thing. So if that's true, there's an implication here is that when we say that we can't fully understand a mitzvah, it could have a chilling effect on our curiosity for tamei mitzvahs and appreciation. And in a result, it could kind of dull our appreciation for the wisdom of the way a Kaddish Baruch Hu does the world. And instead, we could just say, this has to be a blanket, stale dogma. We can't think about it in any way. We need to keep that in context and pare it back as well. I mean, just like we need to balance out our curiosity with acceptance first and questions later, we shouldn't forget the fact that questions and expanding our understanding should come later as well. Next, Rashi says, but for the incident and May Meriva, it would be a fast track to entering Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. And then May Meriva came, which is in our Parsha, which is, you know, it is what it is. However, Rashi, all the way back in Sefer Shmos, says that Moshe would not see what happens to the kings of Eretz Canaan. So how do we reconcile that? So the first approach is you go into the land, maybe, but you don't get the whole picture. So either according to the Bartanura, this means in Shmos, Moshe was told he was going to Eretz Yisrael, but he wouldn't see the revenge against the kings. Or according to the Mizrahi, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die before the war actually happens. Second approach is things change. So there are three stages. There's a thought, a gezeira, a decree, and then there's a gezeira and a shvua. And they each have different levels of retractability. This is a benchmark maharal, and that's important to say that there are some which are mutable and some which aren't. And then we have an approach in the Imre Shefer quoted in Sefer Shari Aron, says that bad prophecies, says a tefillah can change things, or according to Rav Steinman, bad prophecies, like nevuahs about bad things, are reversible. So that would be the distinction. And the third is there's an argument for a ace in the hole, as it were, like a trump card. And this is according to the Taz, Rav David Alevi Siegel. He says, after May Meriva, there was an argument for Chil Hashem there, right? Lakdisheni is the pasuk. Yan lohem amantabi lakdisheni. You could have made a Kiddush Hashem, instead you made the opposite. So that was eviscerated. So there was no turning back, Alts Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's another one. Finally, let's try to do one more. This is a Tzedel HaDerech, also kind of a thought question if we don't get any further than this. Rashi says that Hashem offers water to Bnei Yisrael's animals because he cares for our money and our property. That's great, but it's interesting because we ask for ourselves and our animals. So why is this not Tzar Balei Chaim? Five answers. One, the Be'er Basada says it was just in the order you asked. Two, I mean, Tzar Balei Chaim, the Shulchan Aruch says we have to feed the animals for the people. That's the kasha. Answer number two is one is natural and one is miracle, according to Moshe Feinstein. Another answer is that this was talking about water and not food, so maybe that's a Torah Tamima. The Yalkut Yehuda says one is paspasala, one is not. There's another answer that we were actually asking for both, this and also this. So it could be, but that's one that you could ask as a thinking question. Finally, one more. I have to say this, and we'll kind of, you know, work with it, is the taiva of Moshe for Aaron's death. So we have a description of Aaron dying in this week's Parsha, and Rashi tells us and quotes himself elsewhere, the Chazal he quotes elsewhere, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu had a taiva to die like Aaron HaKohen. So one of the questions I would ask is, let's turn this into the thinking question, and maybe I'll tell you my approach later, is what precisely was it that Moshe wanted that was the feature of Aaron's death that he wanted? Was it simply the Mises Nishiko, or could it have been something else? If you look in the description in the Rashi, I think that there's a hint. All right, Shkoyach, thanks for learning. as one last footnote to this, for those of us who are listening to the recording, I would want to make a request. If you have any feedback for me on this year and what would make it most helpful for you, for your own preparation and everything else, please do not feel free to reach out to me. My email is it's supertatichabura@gmail.com, or you can email my personal email, which is david.perkel, P-E-R-K-E-L, at gmail.com. So either supertatichabura, chabura, C-H-A-B-U-R-A, at gmail.com, or my first name dot my last name at gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful Shabbos.